This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still listening to Power Talk with me, Aldrin St. Pierre. So, as we've indicated, we're continuing with the conversation that we started yesterday, and that is around the definition around what we call the expanded definition of unemployment, as well as the official definition of unemployment. And remember that we started this conversation with Risenga Maluleka, who is the statistician general. So he joins us now on the line again to continue that conversation. So, good morning, Maluleka.
Good morning, Aldrin, and again, greetings to the Power FM listeners.
Thank you so much for making time for us again. So yesterday, just to recap quickly, what you made clear was that this particular decision around using the narrow definition of the unemployment rate is a decision that has been taken by the state. Can we just revisit that quickly before we go to where we left off?
Yeah, one thing that we should understand is government takes a lot of decisions. As regards labor markets, for example, there are countries that start at 17 years and they go all the way to 60 or to 65, some to 72. In our case, the Basic Condition of Employment Act states that someone can work. It says that it's illegal to hire anybody below the age of 15. And of course, you cannot hire beyond the age of 65. So what happens is that it's not even government. That is a legislation by parliament. So we adhere to those things. As regards the narrow definition, the National Development Act says that we will track unemployment on a narrow definition. Mm-hmm. It's not only that. On poverty, we track poverty on a lower bound poverty line. So there are so many policies, including in the as acts, as issues of documents, as well as policies like your NDP that we report on.
Okay, so then what we understand from the stats that were released earlier on this week is that although the unemployment rate has decreased to 23.3%, the number of unemployed people increased by 2.2 million.
The number of unemployed people didn't increase by 2.2 million.
Sorry, increased.
It didn't increase. What happened is that the number of people who were employed in the previous quarter decreased by 2.2 million people.
Yeah.
But those people did not go to become unemployed in a narrow sense of definition. Because those people were not actively looking for employment during the lockdown. They went to become not economically active. That's why you don't pick them up on the unemployed. Because if we had that, let me give you a good example. We had 7.1 million people who were unemployed in the first quarter. If we added 2.2 million, we would have ended up with 9.3 million. Unfortunately, the whole issue of computing unemployment rate is not a backpack arithmetic where you just add the numbers and you say we have this. It is based on what the respondents tell us. So yesterday you kept on asking me if this is a real unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, it is a real unemployment rate because it reports what has happened in the society.
Yeah.
What happens is this. You are deemed to be unemployed if you are actively looking for employment. Now, during the lockdown, many people didn't actively look for employment. So we had 7.1 million in the first quarter of unemployed people.
Mm-hmm.
They decreased to 4.3 million. Only 4.3 million people looked for employment. So those constitute the 23%. Versus the 23.3% versus the 30.1%, which was representative of the 7.1 million people.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at, there has been a decrease in the number of people who were actively looking for employment. meaning that the number of people who are unemployed has decreased. But because there's a decrease also on the employed people, it doesn't necessarily mean that we just do addition. We ask the people, did you actively look for employment? If they say no, they are not unemployed, then they go to other, I mean, they go to not economically active. And when they go to that batch of not economically active, then they help us to compute the expanded definition, which we were able to say, yes, there are 10.3 million people in the expanded definition.
Yeah.
And those represent 42%. But the 42% is not our headline number because it is not a country's policy, number one. Number two is this phenomenon that we are seeing of a decrease in employed people as well as in the unemployed people, and they move to not economically active, is happening all over the world by the ILO report that was released last Friday, except in the US and Canada. And it's because all of us countries of the world use the same approach. The only difference is in the ages of the working people based on our laws. But the same approach, we use it to compute unemployment because we adhere to international best practice. Now, the question that you also asked yesterday was that how come we don't have our own approach? And I'm saying we can't have our own approach as a country when numbers that come happen not to give us what we expect, because everyone in the public was saying unemployment will go very high during the lockdown. But the fact is there are technicalities in the way you classify unemployment, because you don't just add 1 + 1 and say it's 2. You say 1 + 1 indeed is 2, but if one, if a half moves, you don't add it to the other side. You ask people. Once they respond, they tell you what they are doing. Once they tell you what they are doing, that's how you classify them.
So remember the argument that I made as well, that this then means that if we continue with this particular approach, we could even find ourselves in a situation where you have, we say 5% of, we have an unemployment rate of 5%, yet we have 70% of our workforce which is not economically active, which doesn't give for me a true reflection of joblessness. And maybe maybe there's a question around the difference between joblessness and unemployment.
Let us look at it this way. Being economically active is when you are employed as well as when you are unemployed and you are actively looking for employment. When you are not actively looking for employment, and I want to come to this point that true, we could sit with, say this, the lockdown were to sustain and people are no longer looking for employment, we could sit with 5% unemployment. But what would happen then is that if people who are actually not looking for employment are lower, we will have 5%. As long as they are sitting at home and they are not economically active. But where we would report them on unemployment, we would report them on the expanded side. Because we have always had status say, since time immemorial, and particularly since we introduced the quarterly labor force survey in 2008, we have always reported the official, that is the narrow definition, together with the expanded definition. There we haven't failed, number one. Number two is, not only on this, even on matters poverty, we produce all three lines, the upper bound, lower bound, and the food poverty line. But we only put as headline the one that the country is tracking. And there are other countries that are actually just tracking the food poverty line. That's their headline number.
Okay. A question here from Mbazima Shiloa asking, says, ask him to explain the difference between unemployment and not economically active.
Unemployment is when you are actively looking for employment and you, by the time we come to see you, you haven't gotten employment. Then you are unemployed. That's what we use. We use such number of people to compute the unemployment rate. Not economically active is when someone is has looked for employment and is a discouraged work seeker, and they are seated at home. Or it's a husband or a wife who is a homemaker or a spouse whose husband or wife said, you can't work, I will provide. They sit at home, they are not looking for employment.
Mm-hmm.
Or you are in the age of 15 years to say 24 years, but you are not looking for employment because you are studying. Sometimes someone is in that age category, 15 to 64, but they say, I'm sick or I'm a person living with disability. As well as people who will say, I'm 18 years, but I consider myself too young to look for employment. Or I'm 63 years, I consider myself too old to look for employment. All these people are not looking for employment. Mm-hmm. What defines not economically active is that you are not actively looking for employment.
Okay. So from the conversations that you would have had with the government and from the knowledge that you have, what's the reasoning behind focusing on the narrow definition when, for me, and I still argue that the true reflection is that we have way more people, and these for me is not just people who are not economically active, these are warm bodies that policy needs to respond to. But from the conversations that you've had with the state and from your own knowledge, what is the rationale behind focusing on a narrow definition of unemployment?
We are independent, as states say.
Yeah.
We present numbers to policymakers.
Yeah.
The moment we start influencing policymakers to use our numbers, let me give a good example. Let us assume this number that we are having of 23%. We take it to government, and government always wants unemployment to be low. They want prices to be low, GDP, economic growth to be very high. Let's say we took it to government and they said, well, this is a very good number. Let's use it as a target for the future. And if we are party to that, we would lose our independence. So we are independent. What we do is we present numbers to them. And government looks at the trend over time and they come to their decisions. So the rationale on why we are tracking lower bound poverty line, why we are taking the narrow definition as a way of explaining unemployment, that one is for the policy space. It's not for the...
No, I understand. I'm not saying what your opinion is on it, but rather what do you understand the rationale of it to be?
Let me finish here, please.
Okay.
The fact is, then the South Africa compares with other nations. And if you look at most countries on the continent, as well as in emerging economies, maybe with an exception of countries like Mexico, as well as in the Latin Americas, countries like your Honduras. But if you look at countries like Costa Rica, you look at countries on the continent like Kenya, Nigeria, and the like, they track the lower bound poverty line, they track the narrow definition.
Yeah.
So South Africa then also looks at countries that it compares with for purposes of making decisions based on a holistic number of issues, not only one issue of unemployment.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain the rationale, SG, because I want to get to the point of the rationale. Saying that we're using international best practice for me is not rationale. What's the rationale behind saying that let's focus on what we call the narrow definition of unemployment and not the broad definition of unemployment or the expanded definition of unemployment? And I'm not asking you to express your opinion on it, but just your understanding from why government has taken that particular route.
I can, if you don't expect me to express my opinion, you want me to express my understanding. I've just given you my understanding. My understanding is that there are comparisons with other emerging economies in the world of a similar nature. But why government chooses, it's independent of the statistician general. The statistician general cannot be in the policy space because we will lose our independence as a state.
Yeah. Okay, 0619870000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk, and also tweet at Power FM 987. We're in conversation with Risenga Maluleke, who is the Statistician General, and we're having a conversation which we started yesterday, and that is around the expanded definition of unemployment and also the rationale behind this particular decision that has been taken by the state. We have been told that, unfortunately, the Labour Department can't avail anyone to have this conversation with us around the decision by the state to go this particular route. So we're trying to find somebody else who would be able to join us for this conversation. We're taking your calls just after this.
Power Talk with Aldrin St. Pierre, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
Nina, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Aldrin and your guest. Look, Aldrin, I think from my perspective, there's two sides of this. The one side is fine. We do some comparative analysis with other emergent economies that, you know, have similar contours, I'm going to say. But on the other hand, the fact is that South Africa is a very specific country which we, the citizens, live in.
And quite and complex actually, as well.
Well, of course, the point is there are coordinates here that don't exist in other countries. So one can be presented, we can be presented with two figures. The one figure which is used for comparison with other countries. But the other figure would be really taking into account the fact that we have been plunged into junk status, which other countries may not have been.
Yes.
That, you know, and that has profound consequences. It also would take into account how the economies of those countries are functioning at the moment, where they are at the moment. So we have unique factors which would have to be plugged into what is happening with unemployment so that we can solve our problems. We're not solving Kenya's problems. We're solving our problems, and we have to have very real, very specific data.
Thank you so much for that, Nina. SG?
Certainly, Nina is raising a critical point, but I don't think this point should be coming to the Statistician General. This point should be going to government. The role of the Statistician General is to independently measure. And when we say we are plunged into a junk status, certainly, is because the Statistician General continues to measure and say the economy is growing at this rate, at this rate, at this rate, and based and they don't use the GDP alone. They use other policies, the policy narrative that the country is following. So certainly, it's the same like the one we're dealing with before to say, what is the reason why government, those are not for the Statistician General. There was a point you said yesterday, Aldrin, we should not leave it out. You wanted us to say, now that we are running on collections over the phone, what is the reliability of our numbers? And I think we need to deal with it here. Yeah. The one thing that we should understand during the COVID-19 is that we couldn't have anybody going to have contact with members of the public. So we used cell phones, telephones to reach out to all members of the public whose cell phones we had. We could only, usually we reach up to about 30,000 households, but we usually use dwelling units because you can go into a dwelling unit and find sometimes two households. Usually our dwelling units are about 28,000, but those with cell phones were only 17,600, to be exact, 17,596, and they represented 62%. Of our of our respondents out of the entire total labor force that we usually collect. Now we have a response rate from each province, from each metro, on each of these respondents. But this would have created a bias, Altri, because we only reached out to people with cell phones. How about a person who has no cell phone who's looking for employment?
Yes.
So we had to go back to our historic record. That's why we know how much we usually reach every quarter. To our historic records and work backwards to be able to compute an unemployment rate based on what we have observed previously and what we have currently.
Yeah.
And once we had that, we were able to come up with this unemployment rate that we have made public. And our response rate that were picked up on all these cell numbers was 76.9%, which was comfortable to publish. And this issue of the pandemic has affected every country where lockdown stopped people from coming into contact.
Mm-hmm.
We could have said and say, we are waiting for the pandemic to end, but we didn't do that to our nation. And these numbers that we have made available can stand and will always stand the test of time statistically, mm-hmm. and we have made them available.
So even if you argue that you only had 17,600 people who have cell phones who you could access, and that quantifies to about 62%, and knowing South Africa's own inequality issues and the issue that you just raised now, that somebody could not be having a cell phone, you still maintain that the stats that you've shared with the country are reliable, even though you weren't able to get access to people who don't have cell phones.
Aldrin, we have records of everyone we have interviewed since 2008.
Yeah.
So we went back to our historic records to see how we are moving forward to compute this. That we use that to eliminate the bias. The point you are making is that it would have introduced the bias, which we have already made public in our release, that we knew it would introduce a bias, but we used statistical methods and techniques to be able to eliminate the bias by going backwards on our records.
Mm-hmm.
The latest one being quarter one of 2020, where we had all records of everyone, and we worked backwards and looking at those that we had kept in the loop for rotation. Because when you take some out of the sample, there are those that you keep for purposes of control going forward. And this is what is done statistically all over the world.
Yeah, but as Nina was pointing out, though, that what we're going through right now is quite unique and it's quite different. And looking at, for instance, the credit ratings, below investment credit rating, the junk statuses that the country currently faces, those also have an impact. So even if you do go back to stats dating back as 2008, in 2008 even, we didn't have a scenario that we're currently facing. So there's an issue with the reliability of the data, isn't there?
There is no doubt about the reliability of the data. We are solid on that, Aldrin.
Mm.
The quarter one of 2020 fourth quarter of 2019, we don't have to go all the way to 2008. The most recent quarter is the most controlling quarter that you use.
Mm.
In 2019, October to December, as well as January to March this year, we have solid data that we have been working on all the time. So while Nina makes a point that our situation is unique, indeed it is unique, but for any statistical agency, when you have to keep your nation informed, you use statistical methods. It doesn't matter whether you are in London or Peru or where.
Mm-hmm.
We use the same techniques. Our situations may be different, but the average, the mean remains a mean. The standard deviation remains a standard deviation. It's like saying that headache in London is different from headache in South Africa in medical terms. They are not different.
But there's a conversation about having different strains of COVID-19. But that's a conversation for another day. We're going to go to Power News headlines. We're taking your calls just after this.
Good morning in newsmaking headlines. The former ANC member who handed himself over to the Alberton police station is due to appear at Palmridge Magistrates Court this morning. The man testified at the Zondo Commission of Inquiry in the past month relating to Bosasa. In his bombshell testimony earlier to the Zondo Commission, former Bosasa Chief Operating Officer Angelo Agrizi had stated that Bosasa paid more than 600,000 rand to the suspect. In other news, 31 international flights will arrive and depart at the OR Tambo International Airport as the country's borders reopen for business and leisure travel. The first flight to land at OR Tambo was a German flight which flew from Frankfurt to Johannesburg. Airports company South Africa says flights will be carrying between 300 and 400 passengers. Tourism Minister Mamoloko Kubayingubani was at the airport to receive the first international flight.
Is to continue to assure our travelers that when they come to the country, will not compromise their safety. So as you have seen, we've met the crew, we managed to welcome them, And we'd have seen it's a very big coup because they've not been able to come. Remember, every time a flight comes, they have crews exchanging. So because it's a first flight, they had a larger crew that is going to remain the other one when it goes so that they start that routine of changing. So that's the first thing. Secondly, we've been able to walk through, interacted with the Port Health, who have given us assurance of the work that they've done.
More on these and other stories at 11.
Okay, and we're taking your calls on 0861-987-000. Please be brief and straight to the point. We only have the SG for a few more minutes. Sanele, good morning.
Good morning, Putin Jani.
Good, good, Sanele.
Sure. I just want to ask, as statisticians, are you guys satisfied that you are doing what you are supposed to be doing? I understand that you are having a constitutional duty to assist us as a country, to assist government towards making decisions, towards planning. Are you comfortable with the 23%? If just forget about government and the mandate that you have. If you had it within your means, would you have came up to with 23%? Would you have changed the methodology which tells us about the 23%? And just by the way, what is the significance of this 23%? How does it help us as a country? Yeah. Will it help us in any way? Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. Sanele, SG?
Firstly, is that we don't change methods as statisticians willy-nilly. When statisticians in official practice change methods to find a number that suits them, those statisticians should be removed from office. They are very dangerous to the country. Because what we do, when we change methods, we must consult users. And when we have consulted users, there is something called Siri, that is a number of points through which you have produced certain data. Mm-hmm. If you change methods, we end up with what we call broken theory. And breaking theory is an unforgivable offense that a statistician in official practice can commit because we will affect future generations. I'll give an example. Look at the global meltdown, the economic meltdown of 2008. Unemployment went up in 2009 particularly, but it stabilized. Even now, it has gone down. Future generations will need to know, researchers and the like. Now, there's a question whether we forget government, tell us something. We don't produce our statistics for government. Government is our biggest user. So is the private sector. They are our biggest user. But the data we produce is produced for everybody else in the country. That's why when we release data, we don't first go and brief the government. I report to the Minister in the Presidency, Jackson Mthembu, who happens to be spokesperson, mm-hmm. who happens to represent government when it comes to matters that require government to speak to the nation.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even have a preside on the numbers because it is illegal for me to discuss numbers with anybody before they are produced, especially leaders, including politicians, because the statistician general has to remain independent at mm-hmm. all times. So our government is just our biggest user, so is the private sector, but we produce numbers for everyone. Scholars and researchers are already using these numbers as we are talking now.
Yeah.
The one other point I want to talk to is, statistics are never an absolute number.
Hi, SG, are you there? Hello? Okay, we seem to have lost the SG. We're going to try and connect with him again. In the meantime, looking at some of your tweets, socialist agitator says that I can only be counted as one who is not looking for work if I have rejected one. These stats are just not making sense. And Max is this Mosime who says that morning, can you ask the statistician general if there's a stats for people who are eligible for work but not currently employed, and if this number would be true, would be the true unemployment rate? There was also another tweet that came in earlier on, Patla, who says that, but we use emails and other networking tools to look for jobs. Please ask him why he's trying to hide the 42% unemployment rate. And Mashek says this guy is saying something and nothing at the same time. And here's a tweet here from iTrade Nasdaq who says that how do they conclude that people are not looking for employment? SG, we lost you there for a second.
Yeah, what I was saying is that statistics are not a deterministic measure, like where you come and say to the point we have 200 people here. These are estimates. But these estimates must be done on solid methods that are used everywhere, because we study the same methods all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point I'm making here is, even during the census, you come up with an estimate. So even here, while we say it's an estimate for...
Oh, okay. No, that line is not helping us at all. So we will be joined by Johnny Masibuyana, who is a director for ILO, that is the International Labour Organization, to have this conversation further. And this is internationally why this particular approach as well, because as the SGS said, that this is part of international best practice. SGS, ifo naina mali.
Yeah, my apologies indeed. It is because this estimate based on international best practice and methods that every statistician studies when they go to school, but leave that all over the world, we do the same. We may differ on issues of which categories we include based on the laws of our country. But these estimates are the ones that we are we even measure. Are we 90% comfortable or 95%? That's why when we release numbers, we always give out the confidence limit for researchers to know how solid we are on the number we make public.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I want us to go back to, Aldrin, is that we postponed the release of this number twice.
Yes.
It's because we, as experts say, were not satisfied when we first looked at the data. We needed to do more work called data confrontation, where we go back to historic records, especially the first...
Your call has been placed on hold. Please wait.
Okay. SG?
Your call has...
Okay, no, this is not going to work. I know that he has another important meeting that he has to go to. But I think we can continue with the conversation with you in the meantime on 0861-987-000. You can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk, and also tweet at PowerFM987. As I indicated, that Dr. Johnny Masibuyane will be joining us in the next few minutes. Butana, good morning.
Adrian, good morning. I wanted to ask the statistician there. So this data is telling us that the unemployment has dropped.
Yeah.
Under COVID, under lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well done, Matamela. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Yeah, because, Butana, the thing is that is how you would read into the stats, right? Because when you look at the, what do they call it again? When you look at the Reserve Bank, when the Reserve Bank reports back to us, they also speak about the unemployment rate. And ordinarily, the unemployment rate that they refer to is the official unemployment rate, which is the narrow definition of the unemployment rate. Which, if you look at this unemployment rate of 23.3%, it gives a very rosy picture of South Africa's stats, even though we are saying that we are publishing both numbers, the expanded definition and the narrow definition.
Okay, so you must use the both numbers, otherwise you'll be misleading people.
Mina, my argument is use the expanded definition, but I'm not an economist, so economists, I think, believe that we should be using the narrow definition. But I know that Andile Khumalo has been one of those people who have been arguing that we should be using the expanded definition of unemployment, because that for me also gives a true reflection of the number of people who are not in employment.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for that. David, good morning.
Morning, Aldrin. How are you?
Good, David.
I'm fine. Actually, I used to work for statistics. When they conduct quarterly labor force survey, you know, when it comes to the foreigners, they don't ask them about their nationality.
Okay.
And it gives me a problem because I just want to understand whether these numbers are they based on South Africans or everyone. And they don't, as I said, they don't ask their nationality. That means they don't know whether those foreigners are illegal or what.
So how would you guys have gone about it?
No, you just ask them their nationality. You ask them their race, date of birth, and where are they working. They'll just give you that information. Yeah, and so you don't, but you can tell for this guy is a foreigner or what.
Yeah. And you are arguing that factoring that in as well is very important.
Yes.
Why would
because
you say
they
that?
Are not allowed, because they are not, they say you are not allowed to ask for the nationality because of to give you the correct result based on how many South Africans are unemployed and foreigners who are not employed. Understand what I'm saying?
Mm. And also considering, Wena David, that you do have a number of illegal foreigners, and we don't have the true stats around the illegal foreigners, and they find that they are actually employed. So when you ask them about that, you get that the person is employed. But then, do you ask the ID number as well?
No, we are not allowed to ask the ID number. You just ask the date of birth.
Date of birth?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, so that we can have the number of maybe, like they normally say when they report the result, they will say, let's say, like they will say the people are under 35, they are unemployed, things like that.
Mm. You see. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. No, thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that, David. Okay, we're joined on the line by Dr. Johnny Masibuyane, as we've indicated, Director of International Labour Organization in the Pretoria office. Dr. Johnny, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Adrian, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you for making time for us. I know that you've been jumping in and out of meetings and webinars, but we appreciate the time that you've made available to us. So earlier on, we had a conversation with the Statistician General, and this is with regards to a decision that has been taken. It's a government decision around rather focusing on the narrow definition of unemployment and not the expanded definition of unemployment. And what he has indicated is that this is also part of international best practice, which is something which is endorsed by the International Labour Organization. So I want to get to understand what is the rationale behind it.
Thank you for this question. So let me just start by saying there's something called the International Council of Labour Statisticians, which meets every 2 years, and they look at the global labor market, and then they agree on the minimum set of indicators on data to be collected about the labor market and the parameters and the definition of the parameters so that there's comparability of data across countries. So the two concepts, one is the narrow definition, which says people who are actively looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And then the expanded definition, which says all the people who do not have a job,
mm-hmm.
those that are looking and those that do are not discouraged, have. As yeah. we call them, and yeah. are not looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really the prerogative of a country, then its sovereign right to then decide, do they only go with the narrow definition or do they go with the expanded definition? Both are equally valid measures in terms of global comparability. But what I can be frank and say is that we are seeing a tendency towards many more countries preferring to go for the narrow rather than the expanded definition. For technical reasons, but one can surmise maybe also for political reasons.
Ah.
If I could put it like that.
Okay, why do you say that?
I guess, look, the experiences we've had, for example, is that unemployment is a big, not only a socioeconomic issue, but also, of course, a political issue. And I think the world over now, we are all looking, I think our eyes are glued on the US debate and the job issue. Anytime there's an election, jobs, I think, are at the, if not close to the top. And so how to calculate them, how to apportion the performance of particular administrations in terms of job creation becomes an issue in the political domain. And therefore, how to measure it becomes in the political domain. And then when you have a choice of two definitions, then it's your sovereign right. Which one do you choose and which one, let's say, presents the performance of particular administrations in the best possible light?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so you're saying that what you're realizing now as the ILO is that more countries are going for the narrow definition.
Indeed, that's a global trend, especially in this period of COVID, where let's say, the level of discouraged work seekers has dramatically increased, yes.
Yeah. But why do we even have the option of the narrow definition if for me the true reflection of the joblessness rate is reflected in the expanded definition?
Yes.
So why is that option even available?
Look, Edwin, I'm not sitting in the council and to hear the pros and the cons. What I understand as an ILO official is that we are also dealing with the labor market is about freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Do I choose to look for a job or do I, after being discouraged, choose to stay at home?
Mm.
We could be both subjected to the same macroeconomic situation and you choose to look for a job and I choose to stay at home. That's a choice,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is at the core of, I think, the labor market.
Yeah,
I think that's why we have these two definitions.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But as the ILO, what's your take on that?
Well, we respect both because we have something called conventions, mm-hmm. which are instruments, legal instruments that manage the labor market.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the key ones is on freedom of association and the right to collective bargaining. And that convention puts the issue of choice and freedom at the center of labor market governance.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if we put that as a principle, then we have to respect that human beings have a right to choose to look for or to choose not to look for if they feel the conditions are too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then both measures are equally valid.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we'd end up being like, we have a principle also called forced labor, saying everyone must look for a job. If you don't have a job, you must look for it.
Mm.
I don't think we would then be in a democracy and these issues of freedom and choice would then be thrown through the window, I think.
Yeah, but then in terms of defining the labor force, does that not distort the numbers? And even for organizations, and I'm thinking here about unions who would be aligned to the ILO as well, that what they are experiencing on the shop floor, the factory floor, it's much different to what is being portrayed by the statistician general, whether it is through policy decision, but there is just an inconsistency.
I think we have to applaud the authorities, and I must say Statista is one of the very good statistical agencies we work with globally. And they do sit in these, let's say, technical committees looking at these issues. The important thing is to be transparent. Which one are you using, and say it up front. We are using the expanded definition or we are using the limited definition.
Yeah.
And then that sends the signal to everyone. Mm-hmm. This is only measuring this element. We are not measuring, let's say, the total reality of all people who are not working, but those that are trying to look for a job and not being able to find a job.
Yeah, yeah. Then when we speak about the ones who are discouraged, does it also have to take into consideration that somebody becomes discouraged because they've tried to apply for a job, but they are not finding the job, and therefore that's why they become discouraged? However, though, as one of our listeners has pointed out here, who spoke about, okay, here it is, Mutabo, who says that economically inactive people are dead people. My mother, she's unemployed, but she's definitely economically active, and I believe she must be included in the official unemployment percentage, because if anymore or anyone was to offer her a job, she would take it.
Yeah, yeah. I hear the listener.
Mm.
There is a definition of the number of work hours for it to be called a job.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be economically active, but if you are not reaching the threshold of the number of hours per day, that then constitute economically active,
mm-hmm.
then you would be considered economically ineffective, which is a definitional issue. It's if you have a garden at the back of your residence and you work in that garden 1 hour a day and you do raise vegetables, which you are able to sell, you mm-hmm. are active. Mm-hmm. But to be considered to be having a job,
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the economic threshold, if I'm not mistaken, is I think 3 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you need to be looking for a job 3 hours a day. Threshold.
Yes. Remember, we are dealing with also issues of measurement, Adrian, and at a certain point, you need thresholds on what do we measure, what do we not measure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you so much.
Yep. But allow me to just conclude by saying COVID and the impact of COVID definitely has increased the number of people who are unable to get work opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the reality that we are facing. And I think that's what the numbers from the statistics SA has shown us. And that's the numbers that I think the media is showing us throughout the world.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for that. That is Dr. Joni Masibuyane, who is a director at the International Labour Organization at the Pretoria-based office. When we come back, we have Ntate Resenga Moluleke, who is back on the line, and hopefully the line won't cut this time.
Tweet Eldrin at Eldrin Sampier.
And a tweet here from Sanelo says, statisticians must rise against this nonsensical reporting of statistics in South Africa. We know that unemployment has gone up. To use a narrow definition as an official unemployment rate makes a mockery of our country. Stop politicizing statistics. What a tongue twister. SG, welcome back.
Thank you indeed, Aldrin, and again to the listeners.
Mm.
I want to take a comment from the statement that you have just read.
Yeah.
That as a country, and indeed anywhere else in the world, we should not, when we hear a number we don't want to hear, say that people are not doing what they're supposed to do.
Mm.
Because the narrow definition has been used from 2008, and we have published it together with the expanded definition. Now, it's not like we just decided to use it this time because there's COVID. We use it all the time. But the point I was making is statistics are estimates. And when we release our report, we release this, what we see in the headline number. The report states how many people we reached out to, how many dwelling units, what is the response rate, what is our confidence interval. We make all these things public in our report. We don't keep them away from the public. I would encourage members of the public to engage with the report on our website to see that everything that we have to inform the public is there in the report. It's just that when we present it, obviously we have a few minutes with you members of the media. And for today, we really appreciate that you have given us an hour to communicate, to share our message and engage us in a robust way to deal with these issues and issues of public perception.
Okay, and just in closing then, SG, as well, is a question around, so you can see that there is some unhappiness, of course, with how the stats are being reported. And as you've said, that you are just merely an implementing agency and the policy decisions are being taken by government and also taken by the legislature. What would you then say to South Africans, those who are saying that they are not happy with the approach of StatsSA, that we need to relook at the way that we collate data, the way that we grind the data, and the way that we dissect the data as well, because of the complexities of being a South African, and to the point that was raised by one of our listeners as well earlier on in the tweet that I read earlier on about my mum, here he is again, he says, Mutabo, who says that economically inactive people are dead people. My mother, she's unemployed, but she's definitely economically active, and I believe she must be included in the official unemployment percentage, because if anyone was to offer her a job, she would take it.
Certainly, if she would take the job, he's making a critical point there.
Yeah.
It is not like we need another approach, Aldrin. Everything is there in our report. Because for those that are actively looking for employment, we report them on the narrow definition. For those who are not actively looking for employment but would have taken employment had it been available, they form part of the expanded definition. It is there. Because in the expanded definition, you take those that are actively looking for employment, your discouraged work seeker, as well as those who didn't look for employment, but would have taken employment if it's available. Everything is there. So we don't need a new approach. We just need more discussions about the reports that come from SSA to demystify them from the way they are being perceived.
But the decision-making around which one becomes our official unemployment rate...
certainly.
Yeah.
That one, members of the public, remember, we have what we call participatory democracy in South Africa. Members of the public, and indeed everyone, should be able to raise this matter. There are ways in which engagements occur. Okay. And this matter reaches a policymaker to take a decision. And that remit is beyond SSA and the statistician general, because we have to remain independent at all times.
Okay. And there's another question, SG, and this is in relation to foreign nationals. Why is there any distinction that's made between employed South Africans and employed foreign nationals? And this was a point that was raised by one of the people who said that he has worked with StatsSA as well, that all they have to do is just ask for the age, race as well, whether they're employed, but nothing to do with whether they are South African or not.
Firstly, is that you will remember the current U.S. census has gone to court many times because President Trump wanted to enumerate foreign nationals in the U.S. separately, and he didn't even win on that one. The census had to adhere to what the United Nations Fundamental Principles of Official Statistics, mm-hmm. which all of us adhere to. Now, we cannot, as South Africa, say that we want to, when we look at the labor force, we want to separate foreign nationals from the nationals. What we do every 5 years, and the last one was in 2017, we introduce a module which tells us the foreign nationals, how many they are, where they are. So we can tell you, out of the 14.1 million people who were employed in 2000.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.